From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last Monday at a local middle school, where teachers and staff were gathered for a faculty meeting. Part of that meeting included a presentation by a student, a sixth grader named Oscar Morella Bond. Oscar has driven a power wheelchair since he was 19 months old. That's because at the age of 14 months, he was diagnosed with spinal muscular atrophy type 2. It is a rare genetic neuromuscular disease that causes weakness throughout the body. But SMA doesn't slow Oscar down. He is a swimmer, an illustrator, a music lover, and an advocate for disability rights. Recently, the presentation that Oscar gave to his teachers at 12 Corners Middle School went viral in our community. He spoke about accessibility and universal design, ableism, and awkward and even rude or offensive things sometimes people say without knowing that they're offensive. It was an eye-opening presentation that the Connections team thought should be shared with the wide audience. So we invited Oscar to join us in studio, talking more about disability rights, his experiences, disability pride, and a lot more. And so I have heard so much about you, Oscar. It's great to have you in studio finally. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks.
Also with us are Oscar's parents, Sally Bittner-Bond. Welcome back to you, Sally.
Thanks, Evan.
And David Morella is here. David, welcome to you.
Thanks so much, Evan.
And Catherine Liebel is here, school counselor at 12 Corners Middle School. Welcome to you
as
well.
Thanks so much for having us.
It's going to be Oscar's hour here, but I asked our guests before the hour began, what should we make sure we talk about? And Catherine, you said just how awesome Oscar is. How much is he impacting your school community?
Very much so. We've had such great feedback about Oscar. He had 50 staff members completely wrapped and engaged after a hard day, and he gave us many things to think about, and we really appreciate.
So, Oscar, my understanding is you first gave a presentation to a fifth grade class last year talking about human rights. Did you ask to give that presentation? Did you ask to give the one last week? How did all of this start to come together?
So, in fifth grade, for Human Rights Day, my teacher asked me if I wanted to give a presentation on disability rights, and I was like, totally. So I put that together, and that was, like, about 20 minutes long. And then this year, I volunteered to be like, hey, guys, do you want me to give a presentation about disability rights / awareness for the faculty? And they were like, sure. But I had to shorten it to a 7 to 10 minute presentation, which was hard, but I figured it out. And it still worked. So.
Awesome. So we're going to get to what you wanted to talk about and what, and frankly, the reason that producer Megan Mack and I wanted to bring you in here to share this message with all of our listeners is this really should be for everybody. There's universal themes here that are going to be. So listeners, wherever you are, lock in. Oscar's awesome, and this is going to be a great hour.
Thank you.
Tell them about yourself. And I, you know, we tried to cover some of it in the introduction, but tell us a little bit more about you, Oscar.
So I'm in the sixth grade. I really love drawing. I'm a total nerd. I like Norse mythology a lot. And I would say that I'm an activist and like fighting for rights in the community somewhat. Yeah.
That's pretty effective summation there.
All right.
Thanks. So, you know, I'm reading that you first started operating a wheelchair when you were 19 months old.
Yep.
So you probably don't have much memory of not driving a wheelchair.
Yeah, I don't really. I first had a manual wheelchair, but then I started to like need a power wheelchair. So then we transferred me to a power wheelchair. I had like some training with that, but I figured it out and now I'm good at it. And then this is my second power wheelchair. And third wheelchair.
I think for people who aren't all that familiar with spinal muscular atrophy type 2, you know, I think it would be useful for you to describe what that is and what that means for you.
So there's a part of my spine where the nerves aren't, like, fully developed or as strong as they are. So, like, sending the message and the electricity through my body of, like, making my muscles work, kind of, isn't as strong, so my muscles aren't quite as strong. My parents might chime in on this.
Okay, well, we're going to turn to Mom and Dad. I'll start with Sally here. You want to add to that? Because I'm sure you've had to learn a lot over the years as well.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, he's got it. We, you know, the real scientific way to say it is those of us who don't have SMA have a gene called SMN1, and that's responsible for 80% of our motor activity. We have a backup gene called the SMN2 gene. So Oscar does not have an SMN1 gene, but he does have an SMN2 gene. So that provides some backup. So his muscles are weaker than the rest of ours, and you know, walking is not possible, and you know, there are other things that from a physical strength standpoint can be harder. So that's the nutshell.
Okay. Dad, David, you want to add to that? Is that pretty effective? You got it? Okay. Thumbs up there. And I do want to ask both of Oscar's parents. We're talking to someone who just identified himself in part as an activist, and he's in sixth grade. And any parent, parents love their kids. Parents worry about their kids. We worry about them, you know, making friends at school, doing well in school, all of the things that you think about. Oscar has obviously adapted and lives very effectively and comfortably. But now, I mean, did you even envision, if you go back 10 years and I told you, your sixth grader is going to be an activist and he's going to be educating people, and they're not going to be praising him in a patronizing way. I mean, he's going to be full on educating people effectively and openly in our community and self-identify in sixth grade as an activist. What would you have thought, Sally?
I'm not even sure I can answer that question. I mean, I'm just so proud of his voice and the way he uses it today. It's amazing.
What do you think, David?
I think early on, you know, we caught wind of, you know, his willpower and his self-advocacy and you know, there's no way we could have envisioned, you know, where we are and how we, negotiate and navigate, you know, SMA as a family. And, you know, it's really a privilege to watch Oscar do it because it's really about him, you know, out there in the community living with SMA. You know, I remember when he left for school, he got on the bus for the first time, you know, went out into the world on his own. What a moment that was, you know, when any parent is going to have a great number of fears. But this kid has defied that every step of the way. I mean, he just has a strong sense of self, and he is a phenomenal self-advocate. And, you know, Sally and I often marvel at how much he has taught us, I mean, about parenting, about advocacy, about just being out there in the world.
Well, Oscar, that's high praise. So let's talk about what you've been presenting on. And why don't you take me back a week here? When you sit down with faculty, they've got a chance to understand or at least listen to you, help them see what you want them to see. Where do you start? What's the most important message?
So at the very beginning, I started off with, like, hey, what does a disability mean to me? Like, what is that? So there is like a whole definition of it, but
can you give it to us?
Not off the top of my head. It's like a paragraph long. But like basically people that need extra accommodations in everyday activities because of some type of impairment or thing that they have to deal with physically or mentally.
Okay.
So we started off with that. And then kind of getting into like kind of how disabilities, how people treat them, and how that's, a lot of people treat them like it's a bad thing, like it's this horrible hardship. And it's not that that's the bad, that it's not that that's hard. It's the community that hasn't accepted disability. And what I got into, the world was not made with accessibility in mind. Like, ramps and things, like, all the whole universal design thing, like, that wasn't a thing. It hasn't been a thing. And it's hard sometimes to navigate, like, when people park in the yellow lines in the car where I can get out of my van, or when people are covering the curb cut, which is my only way onto the sidewalk, or those kind of things is challenging because it's like, now I have to figure out a way to be able to get that thing that people wouldn't think twice about. And then I also got into, like, words that have a lot of power that are not okay to be used to describe someone with a disability. For example, cripple, which has been used to describe people, and it's not an okay word for an able-bodied person to say to a disabled person. And also the word lame is, people just think it's like, oh, that's lame, that's bad, that's whatever, it's stupid. But that was actually originally used as a derogatory term for a person with a disability.
Would you prefer us not to use lame as a pejorative term just to describe anything? A movie, an afternoon, a meal. Is lame a word that you'd like to eliminate usage of?
I mean, generally, like, sort of. Like, I get why people use it because they just don't know. But I feel like if you go into the background of it, it's like, that isn't really an okay word. But I don't know. Maybe?
I'm listening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And then I also got into, like, what people say to me. What people have said to me that are awkward and weird out in the community.
There's one on the list. Can we start with this?
Yes.
People say, I'll pray for you.
Yeah.
What is that? How do you feel when someone says, I'll pray for you?
It's very awkward. Because if I'm just, like, if you're, imagine you being in the middle of a grocery store, you're just walking, you're just doing your own thing, and somebody comes up to you and's like, I'll pray for you, and they walk away. You're like, what? Like, what does that mean? And probably because they think that having a disability is a hardship and that they need to pray for me. So my new retort for saying that is, pray for me that I won't have homework? Wonderful. Because I don't want homework. Nobody wants homework. And then those things.
Do you actually say, have you said that yet? Have you tried that out in actual practice in the wild?
I have, at least, I think, once. I have.
Okay. And you get, like, a little smile or, like, a little laugh or something.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting because I'm sure, Oscar, some people listening will think, well, if someone says, I'll pray for you, they mean well.
Right.
They mean well. To you, is there, like, a subtext that I'll pray for you because your life is so hard or, you know, whatever,
maybe?
Bad or something? Yeah.
I'm not sure. I mean, I definitely think that, like, they are trying to be nice in that, but in that they're being patronizing and being like, wow, I'll pray for you, like, because something is wrong. One of the things I get a lot, though, is you're so inspiring, or this is incredible. Like, they'll say it to my parents or something. They won't even talk to me. And saying that is, like, because I've gotten out of bed, because I've gone and done my everyday life, like, why is that so inspiring? Why is that incredible that I'm just out in the world? And they think, oh, because, well, that person has a disability. That person is, something's wrong with them. It's, like, it's a hardship, again. And going back to that it's not that, and that I'm just a kid, I'm just a person out in the world living my life.
Yeah, I think you are so inspiring. You're so inspiring probably goes under that category that we've heard of as, like, disability porn. You know, this idea that people might meet Oscar and define Oscar in a way that's like, oh, well, that's a kid with a disability, and therefore his identity is around inspiring us, as opposed to just, how was homework today? What did you do at school? You know, how's things going? You know, what are you interested in?
Right.
And if most of your interactions are with people who focus more on your disability than on who you are, and I understand that identity, we'll talk more about that, but I mean, your interest in how they might talk to somebody who doesn't have the same disability, I would think that gets tiring.
Absolutely. Because, like, the other thing is, if you just see a kid in the store that's walking with their parent, would you go up to that person no matter what and just ask that person, hey, how are you? Maybe you would. So then say the same thing to me. If you're not going to do it to that kid, don't do it to me either.
Okay.
Unless you have a reason other than this person has a disability.
In a moment, we're going to talk about language used in public about the wheelchair itself. Before we do that, let me ask Oscar's parents, how does it hit you now if you hear someone say either, I'll pray for you, I'll pray for your son, or, you know, Oscar, you're so inspiring. What goes through your mind now, Sally?
At this point, we've heard it so much that it's often just very frustrating. I try to keep a perspective that, you know, maybe this is the first kid this person has seen in a wheelchair, and, you know, they're just trying to engage, and they might not have any idea how to do that. But it is exhausting. I'm sure that the things that people say to Oscar or to our family, they don't realize we've heard 1,000 times from other people.
Okay. David?
Yeah, I think I try to be mindful that, you know, they are more often than not, you know, to speak to Oscar's point, you know, well-intentioned. Because we've heard it so many times, we're probably immune to some of it, and we will often immediately turn to Oscar and ask Oscar, you know, what his take on is that. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about these things as a family, whether it's in the living room or around the kitchen table or in our van. We probably spend more time processing it than we do, you know, offering a response to someone that makes that comment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And I hope it's clear to listeners, at least from my perspective listening to Oscar, the line, you're so inspiring, is lands the way it does, I think, with Oscar, because what the person's actually saying is you're so inspiring just for sort of being in the world, as opposed to I am already inspired by Oscar for his activism, for his education,
right,
for the work that you're doing, for what you're doing to help people see. You are inspiring that way.
Thank you.
And I am not backing off that one.
Yeah.
But I get the distinction. I mean, I really do. I really do get the distinction. Now, when it comes to the wheelchair itself, people will say, and I'm reading from in your blog, people will say, hey, you got a driver's license for that thing? Or people will say, you're going to need a speeding ticket. Or, hey, you maneuver that thing so well.
Yeah.
Tell me about it. Oh, Dad's already shaking his head.
So.
Probably because you've heard those many times too, Dave.
Right.
Yeah? Okay.
And those are some of the ones that I hear on a daily basis that I almost don't even think about anymore because it's just going to happen. And at first, like, if you're, like, a family member or someone and you're saying that to me, like, as kind of a joke, where you might to any of your kids sort of like that, then I'm cool with it. But if it's, I'm out in the community, I'm zipping around, somebody says to me, you're going to need a speeding ticket for that thing, that's like saying, you need a speeding ticket for your legs. Or, wow, you're very good at walking. Because my wheelchair is my freedom, it's my movement, it's how I get around. So, like, telling somebody that they're really good at walking is the same thing as telling somebody that they're really good at driving their wheelchair. Because that's what it is to me.
Now, as we look for different distinctions here, if I might say to my son's friend, hey, I like your shoes. If you come over and hang out and I say, that's a cool wheelchair, is that okay with you?
So that's complicated because sometimes that is, it's kind of depending on what context we're saying, because sometimes it'll be like, totally, you're just saying that you like my wheelchair, red's your favorite color, or you think it's cool, and I'm fine with that. But if you're saying that you like my wheelchair as, like, a way to, like, speak to that instead of speaking to me, that's not cool. Because sometimes people will do that instead of being like, hey, what's your name? Instead of being like, hey, I like your wheelchair, and talk about that. That's not relevant to, like, me as a person, but more to my wheelchair and my disability, which takes away from, like, that sort of.
That's interesting. So, David, I heard you, I saw you flinch a little when I mentioned the wheelchair comments that people will make in public. How do you feel when you hear it?
Well, you know, at this point, you know, the idea of you know, Oscar's wheelchair and his identity surrounding the wheelchair, his wheelchair, you know, the use of the word thing, I mean, just negates it negates the fact that he's in a wheelchair. And and furthermore, you know, and Oscar spoke to this a little bit with the shoe and the wheelchair comparison. I think folks do that to diffuse the discomfort about being in the same space as a wheelchair or someone with a disability. And it's awkward. And I mean, like any other, you know, disability or the idea of diversity and inclusivity, you know, is that the first thing that you see, you know? And I mean, and we're not Oscar, you know, so Oscar's on the receiving end of that. So, you know, obviously as his parents, we're going to absorb that feeling.
Yep.
Sally, you want to, can you add to that too, how you feel when you hear people make those comments?
Yeah. You know, again, it's in terms of how it impacts Oscar and the way folks are looking at him and how frustrating it is. I mean, even there are times he comes home from school and, you know, he's around, you know, the same basic groups of kids all the time. And yet sometimes there'll be a kid who'll be like, oh, you're the kid with the disability. You almost ran me over with your wheelchair. Get away from me. And it's just kind of
kids say that?
Stunning.
That actually, I was very surprised when I was at French Road. I was leaving one day to go to the bus, and this kid walked by me, and I ran over his foot. I did not mean to. And it's like, if you step on someone, whatever. And I was just driving. That kid was, whatever, running, and I bumped into him. He was like, oh my god, I got kicked by a disabled kid. And he just, like, ran off. And it was like, what?
So there's, you know, they're kids. They're 10. They're learning. Right. Hopefully, they're going to learn something from Oscar and from the other kids around him. You know, flip side of the coin, recently Oscar had a substitute in one of his classes who was saying some strange things to Oscar using a different tone of voice and even to some of the other people in the class who, you know, could have been considered, you know, part of marginalized groups or whatever. And a number of students stood up in the class and said, hey, talk to Oscar like you talk to anybody else.
I was like,
hey, talk to, you know, talk directly to so-and-so. Instead of about them. And so that was really exciting to know that the kids are kids and kids are hopefully learning these kinds of behaviors in a positive way. It's, of course, harder when it's adults who have had ingrained thoughts and ideas and perceptions that they've carried with them all their lives.
And that's happened. Adults, which...
Oh. In terms of comments, you mean?
Yeah.
Not that adults can't learn. Of course they can.
Yeah, but adults have, like, acted to me in a way. Said, in fourth grade, one of my teachers, I was in a class. It was music class. We were doing a dance, and I had... The dance was... She thought that I wasn't able to do it, how everyone else was doing it, and she was telling me to do it a different way, and I was telling her that I could do it how everyone else was doing, and I was showing her that, and she didn't let me, and she told me that I wasn't allowed to do it the way everyone else was doing it. She told me that I wasn't good enough to do it the way everyone else was doing it, and she told me that I kept, like, if I kept saying that, she would send me out of the classroom. So I was very frustrated about that, and my friend was like, hey, you need to say something to her again at the end of class. So I left. And as we were leaving, I told her, like, I really could do that. And she was like, you really couldn't. And that's so frustrating how in my everyday life, one of my teachers was telling me that I wasn't able to do something because of that bias. And she may have meant well by it, or she may have not. And we're not sure. And we had talked to her, and she didn't own up to it. And that's very frustrating also because, like, in... when stuff like that happens and people are just like, oh, I didn't do that, it's very frustrating because that person, like, did something, and by saying that they didn't, it, like, it's very frustrating, and it's, like, hard to tell that person what they did if they're not listening.
Can I ask you, Oscar, just briefly, you know, when your mom points out that adults can learn, and certainly when you see your fellow students who, you know, they'll stand up and say, hey, you're gonna talk to Oscar like you talk to anybody.
Yeah.
My assumption, and with some experience in camp counselor settings and various places, when a society is not very well integrated, when we don't have access for people, when we're not accustomed to being around people either with disabilities or differences, that even well-meaning people can do things that are sort of jarring or clumsy. And the more we just sort of get into rhythm of being with each other, I think that sentiment that your mom is talking about that your other students might express becomes more natural. Do you think that that's right?
Yeah, because I think that the more people are around me and understand that people are saying stuff that's not okay, they start to pick up on that. Like what you're saying, they just, it's natural. They immediately are like, hey, Oscar's my friend. Be nice to him. Do what you're doing to everybody else. And I think that just becomes a habit because they are my friends. They're around me and they experience that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So
he's just Oscar. You're Oscar first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also want to ask you if you have a friend or a classmate who uses the word lame or makes a kind of comment that we've been talking about that isn't meant to disparage or draw a difference out, but does so. Will you help them see it? Do you talk to people directly, and then do you give them that space to kind of demonstrate that they got it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Unless it's like one of those situations when I'm leaving school and that kid says something and they run off. But like if I'm in class with someone and they say something about it, I'm like, that's not cool. Like, stop. And I tell them why it's not cool, and then they're like, okay. Maybe they're like, okay, and maybe they're just like, whatever. And it keeps happening. Which
to add to that, it was really wonderful at the faculty presentation that one of the teachers asked the question, hey, Oscar, if I say something that I don't know is offensive to you, will you let me know? Will you let us as a faculty know? And I thought that was such a great and important question.
It is a great question. Mm-hmm. What was your answer to that?
Totally. Because mm-hmm. I think that if somebody says something that I'm not cool with or is on the verge of I'm not cool with, that isn't, like, an okay thing, and I have the chance to, like, say, hey, here's how you should have said that, or here's how you might say that in the future, then totally. So. Mm-hmm.
Powerful. In our second half hour, I'm going to ask Catherine to kind of describe how she thinks some of those lessons have landed. But let me grab a phone call. This is Calvin in Rochester on the line with us. Go ahead, Calvin.
Hi, Evan. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Oscar. It's such a pleasure to hear you and to hear your story. And I'm just so thankful that Megan and Evan have been able to bring you and your family on the show to really allow you to speak and share your story and your experiences, because it's so important when you're talking about marginalized identities and just lack of access, and just seeing the humanity in all of us. These are conversations that I wish that we could have more, especially with the perspective of youth. I love when Connections has the voice of young people like yourself. So thank you so much for just being who you are.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Calvin. As always, I appreciate that. And I appreciate Calvin sort of drawing that out too, because we love a wide range of voices, and in particular, we appreciate the perspective of people like Oscar, people who are, what, sixth grade now? How old are you now?
I'm in sixth grade. I'm almost 11.
Almost 11?
On the 10th.
Almost 11?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're 10?
I'm 10.
Is 10 six?
Six, yeah.
That's what that is. I'm doing math in my head. Oscar is, And this is not a patronizing thing to say. You meet Oscar, and in 5 minutes you go, this is one of the smarter people I've been around. It's absolutely true. So we're going to get our only break of the hour. You're meeting Oscar Morella Bond this hour, a sixth grader at 12 Corners Middle School. And his parents, Sally and David, are here. Catherine Liebel is a school counselor at 12 Corners Middle School. Oscar's here because when we heard about some of the things that Oscar's been doing for his school community, we wanted to share that with the broader community. And part of that was last week at the middle school. There was a faculty meeting, and Oscar had a chance to answer questions and to present about what Oscar thinks the teachers, the staff ought to know about access and about a lot of different themes. And when we come back, Catherine's going to kind of characterize how that went. So let's do that next and continue this outstanding conversation with Oscar on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the next Connections, we sit down with Angela Sims, the new president of Colgate Rochester Crozier Divinity School. We'll talk about her continuation of the mission set by her predecessor, Dr. Marvin McMichael, and her vision for the future of CRCDS. Then in our second hour, the Young People's Poet Laureate, Naomi Shihab Nye, joins us on Connections. Talk to you Wednesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So Catherine Liebel is a school counselor at 12 Corners Middle School. Why don't you tell me some of the takeaways you have for what Oscar was able to bring to the staff there?
Well, personally, I'll just say that one of the agreements that Oscar and I talked about when we first met was, I know I'm not going to be a perfect person. There are sometimes I'm going to say things, just like the teacher was mentioning, that aren't going to be sensitive, that I unintentionally might say something that will be hurtful. And so I guess for me professionally, my professional and personal integrity calls for me to be open to that and hearing and listening and really responding. And I think that the reception that we had from the staff was very similar. People were really amazed by his style of presenting, and you're hearing today how great he is, how comfortable he is speaking and articulating his message, and he did that with our staff. Some of the things that people said that my understanding and dedication to inclusivity has been restored. People said what is good for one student is good for every student, and I think that was a huge message that people got is what Oscar's saying and talking about is what's good for everybody. Just people said what Oscar spoke about made me uncomfortable in a good way. I thought that was an interesting thing to say because they started to see themselves maybe in some of the things that they may have said that were insensitive, or maybe they parked on the yellow lines, or maybe they blocked the curb cut, or, and I think people were really trying to be open and hear that. And because of that, I've just heard so much great feedback about how this is really, your message made them really look at themselves. And as a district, obviously, we are trying to be as open and just listening and collaborative. And one of the things fantastic about Oscar and his parents, and I felt this immediate affinity for them, is because you're our teachers. We're supposed to be your teachers, but you're teaching us. And if we can be open to that, we're all going to learn and we're all going to be better. He makes our school better just by being in our school.
That's great feedback. Mm-hmm. So Oscar, I feel comfortable enough with you and your intellect to ask you a question that I've been thinking about, because this conversation is sort of one of a number of conversations that include discussions about the language we use as society, the way we react when people are either saying things or doing things that might be hurtful, especially to, I think as your mom put it, marginalized groups, etc. And I could show you a lot of emails over the years that I've gotten from people who say, boy, there's way too much PC culture on your show or in society. You know, why do we have to be so politically correct? Why do we have to police every word we say? And I think it would be helpful to hear you respond to that. So if somebody says, you know, you're on the fence, but you clearly see some issues with the word lame, or when people even try to say something about your wheelchair, or I'll pray for you. If somebody were to say, come on, man, that's PC culture. Everything doesn't have to be so politically correct. Alana, I kind of want to hear it from you and how you feel about that.
So, one, I'm guessing that most kids my age are not familiar with that term. Two, if somebody did say that to me, I'd probably be like, hey, so you might think that. You might think I'm being too strict with what I'm saying about this. But it's important because just one little thing like that could offend somebody. And that could make a big impact. And it might not. It might not be a big deal. But I think in the long term, it's important for somebody to understand. And not going, like, too much in depth, but, like, saying enough for that person to somewhat get it. I think that's important with saying that, and that's probably what I would say. Somebody would say that to me.
I think that's powerful. No, it really is. And let me ask Mom and Dad how they feel about it. What do you think about that, Sally?
I think it's important to remember that every individual has their own perspective and that just engaging in conversation matters. For example, in the disability community, there's a struggle between person-first language. You know, are you a person with a disability or you are a disabled person? And there are folks who fall very strongly on either side of that argument, and there are people who are totally comfortable either way. And so you might call someone a disabled person and they might be very offended, whereas someone else would be like, yes, of course I'm a disabled person. Do you want to say anything about
how do you feel about that?
That?
Sure. Oscar, yeah.
So I'm on the side of disabled person because for me, saying that a person with a disability is saying a person with a disability, a person, it's like separating the person from the disability. The disability is part of me, so I'm a disabled person. Saying I'm a person with a disability is like saying that I'm a person with this water bottle, or I'm a person with, like, this thing. And in my opinion, I think that's separating the two things when it's one. I think it's disabled person, personally.
That's very interesting. And that's very similar to some of the debate that's happening in the autism community. You know, autistic versus person with autism. And we just try to listen. You know, I think it's very valuable for just to try to listen. What do you think, David?
Yeah, I think that ownership belongs to the person who is autistic or, you know, or the person who is, you know, disabled or the person with a disability or the person with autism. I mean, I don't think it's ours. I mean, I think it goes back to, you know, you alluded to it, Evan. Calvin alluded to it, the caller who called in, you know, the idea of humanity, right? And we are, you know, human beings first, and we're wired separately and we have separate emotions. And I think that it belongs to, you know, each individual. And I think as a community, if we can be sensitive to that notion, you know, we have a fighting chance.
Absolutely, because I think it's what you're saying is that, like, it's important to take everybody's thing in account because one person's might be totally different than someone else's, what they want or what they feel more comfortable with. Because you might ask one person, hey, how do you feel about this? But you might ask another person, how do you feel about this? And they'll have a completely different answer.
Perspective.
So I think sometimes it's important to just, like, keep distance from it and not ask the person at all. And then, like, if it comes up, do it. But sometimes, like, ask a person, like, see what their opinion is on stuff.
Okay. I think that's really valuable. I mean, I think Sally, in particular, has written that it's dehumanizing. It can be to think of a disability as separate from a person who is disabled or with a disability. I think Sally, you wrote, would you ever say slow those legs down to a kid who is running in the way that people might say, hey, slow that wheelchair down. There's a dehumanizing aspect of that, you think?
Yes, because it separates the chair from the person. I mean, Oscar can't move down the hallway without his wheelchair. Mm-hmm. He is the person who's in control. He is in charge of his chair. His chair can't act without him, just like, you know, those of us who might be walking or trudging or running down the hall are in control of that speed. So it's about talking to the person about their actions versus the chair.
And also the deal with adding on to like the dehumanizing with the wheelchair and the person wheelchair bound. People use wheelchair bound and confined to a wheelchair as saying that that person is like trapped in their wheelchair, and it's not. That wheelchair is your freedom. It's how I get around. It's how I can be who I am, go and do stuff. I'm not bound. I'm not like confined. I'm not stuck in here. I am in here to go out and like do it's again, it's my freedom. And I think that's very important for people to know that wheelchair bound is not a term to use to describe someone in a wheelchair.
You touched on it earlier when you talked about sidewalks, when you talked about curbs and the things that people may take for granted that could impact you in strong ways. So let's talk about access and tell me where you think we can do a lot better.
In the community?
Yeah, anywhere,
Okay. So I think that the yellow lines, like, I think people need to be more aware of, like, hey, these are the yellow lines. These are how people can get out of their car. And whatever, not think, oh, there's just some random yellow lines I can park in them. I think it's important for them to know that that's the way I get into the parking lot. Otherwise, I have to get out in the middle of the street, which is unsafe, which we've had to do before. Because if someone's parking in those yellow lines, we're going to have to pull out in a parking lot. And ramp goes down in the middle of the parking lot. Cars are going by. Like, that might, that's definitely unsafe. And I also think with the curb cuts, is people don't think about that. Just, oh, that's a nice way to get on the sidewalk. But it's my only way to get on the sidewalk. Because if there wasn't that, then, like, I can't, I'd have to drive in the street, I'd have to drive in the road. I couldn't get into buildings, because I have to get up on the curb first. And having that slot is very important for me to get out. But often people will park covering that space. And that's very frustrating, because, like, hey, I need to get here. And we will, sometimes we'll leave notes on the person's car, or just tell them if they're there. And be like, hey, don't do that again, please, because that's, we need that space. And also, the other thing with just, like, elevators and ramps and stairs, and how it's important to have elevators and ramps. Because you have a step into a building, I might not be able to get into it. But with a ramp, it's universal design, again, like, everybody can get into it. Everybody can access that. But when a stairs, I can't access that. And with elevators, and again, like, staircases. Also, one thing that has just crossed my mind, like, sometimes with the whole, like, stairs and stuff thing, is, like, for example, like, in CCMS, how they're just, like, in the middle of the hallway. A few times I've thought that where the elevator is where the stairs are, and I've been, like, thought to, like, drive towards down the stairs, and I've been like, whoa, that's not the stairs. So, I mean, that's not the elevator. So, like, almost, it's crossed my mind, like, maybe just have, like, a sign being, like, stairs or elevator. Because, like, they look the same. They're just these doors, and there's this entrance. And I just think, oh, this is where it is. So I just drive there, and I'm like, oh, that's not stairs. Or, oh, that's not an elevator. And maybe not, but, like, I've just kind of, like, thought about that, like, hey, that is kind of dangerous for me to be like, I almost just drove down the stairs. So I guess that also.
Let me ask your parents then. David, where do you see? You want to endorse these ideas? Anything you want to add?
Absolutely want to endorse these ideas. You know, I mean, there are plenty of businesses, you know, that, you know, even here, you know, in town that we frequent, and we, you know, we can't bring Oscar because there's no wheelchair access, places that we, you know, we think he would love. And you know, we both have learned a lot about universal design and the cost of, you know, renovating an old building. You know, you have an opportunity to open a new business, and you open a new business, and yet you still have, you know, two stairs. You know, you're starting from the ground up. You know, why not make it universally accessible? So it's very frustrating on, you know, on that end. And, you know, we commend, you know, TCMS for, you know, working on getting a ramp, you know, in, you know,
that's his school, by the way, Oscar School, yeah, 12 Corners Middle School.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I guess I would ask, you know, that, you know, folks to be, you know, mindful of that. And, you know, how do we get there? You know, I mean, Oscar is certainly, you know, helping to lead the way for universal access.
Okay, Sally?
There's so many things to say. It is certainly, you know, challenging in all different kinds of ways. I mean, one of the greatest barriers around the lack of universal design we see is actually, you know, in private buildings in terms of getting to other people's homes. It is can be very challenging to, you know, Oscar wants to go hang out with a friend and, you know, 90% of the time the friend comes to our house, which is fine. We're more than happy to open our doors and have people at our home. We are extremely fortunate to have a couple of portable ramps that can handle a step or two. But, you know, if somebody's got 4 or 6 steps up into their home, or if they're configured in such a way, it's just getting him into their house is not an option.
And also, if I want to just, like, go and knock on someone's door or ring the doorbell of my neighbor's house and be like, hey, do you want to hang out for a little while, for like an hour, half an hour, whatever, I have to be like, hey, I need somebody to come with me to do that because they might have a front step that I can't reach to get up and hit that doorbell. So then, like, a parent or someone might have to come with me. And that's one thing. And another thing is I can't carpool with friends. Like, I can't go, like, some friends will be like, oh, I went to Buffalo for a weekend with my friend and I did this thing. It's like, I'm not able to do that unless they drive in our car, which sometimes we can't do. But, like, I guess that is also sometimes challenging with just, like, everything built, yep, not very accessible.
Now, having said everything we've said here, I want to ask you, Oscar, how you kind of came out of that meeting with the faculty at the middle school, and if you are left with this idea that, you know, slowly the world is changing for the better, that people are listening, that these ideas are going to spread and be powerful. What do you think?
I think I definitely felt a lot of that because I had spread my message to the faculty at my school. Like, they know about it now. And I think that that's important, and just, like, keep doing what I'm doing and let other people do that too. Like, just, I think, keep spreading that message of inclusivity.
Okay. And, you know, you're just in sixth grade now, and you've obviously been thinking about these issues, your whole life, obviously, but as you get older, as you get wiser, you're taking the time to educate teachers, classmates. Do you see your classmates as responding in ways that are helpful, appropriate, positive? What kind of reaction do you see among your peers?
Definitely some of them. Definitely, like, my friends that I hang out with on a day-to-day basis. Definitely, like, the people that I'm closer to. But some people will just, like, treat me like I'm a baby, which has happened before, which is very awkward. Like, people will, like, talk to me like this. And it's...
Don't do that, world.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it's very annoying.
Wow. Okay. You're going to continue that when you describe yourself as an activist? About a minute left here. Give me a sense for what the word activist means to you and what you want to do with that label.
Like, activist, fighting for the right thing in the world, fighting for people's rights, and having that to do just that, fight for people and be out in the world and help fight for people that are being discriminated against or marginalized groups of people, like, just equality in general. Like, that, again, just, I'm just a kid. I'm not this, like, totally different, crazy person out in the world. I mean, I can be very crazy sometimes, but that's every kid. But, like, there's not something, quote-unquote, wrong with me. It's just, like, I'm just a kid, again, like, out there. And also, really, really fast, disability pride, very important to celebrate people with disabilities and not, like, put them under the bus.
That is different, by the way, though, than just saying, hey, congratulations, you inspire me for being out in the world today. Disability pride is different than sort of, yeah, the... I've learned so much listening to you, and I hope we can do it again, Oscar. Thanks. I really appreciate what you're doing.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Oscar Morella Bond is a sixth grader at 12 Corners Middle School. Also from middle school, school counselor there is Catherine Liebel. You're lucky to have him in the school community. Thank you for being here.
We are lucky. Thank you.
And to Sally and David, Oscar's parents, thank you for coming in and sharing the family story with us. We really appreciate your time this hour.
Thank you, Evan.
Thanks, Evan.
Thank you.
Thanks.
David Griffin, the volunteer today. Megan Mack is the producer of Connections. Rob Braden is the engineer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a beautiful afternoon. Talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.